We will start with our next presentation on virtual education in Illinois for blind and low vision students.
Good morning, it's Lisa.
Hi, Lisa. Okay, the floor is all of yours. Go forth. And we may have questions for you at the end, but we leave it to you to start.
Great, and we do have a PowerPoint. I don't know if we wanted to share that or if it just was sent out, but we could just read off of it as well.
Okay, it we do have it, so if you want to just read off of it, that's probably the best thing to do.
Perfect. Sounds good. And so my name is Molly Dunn. I am the co-chair of IVLC, which is the Illinois Vision Leadership Council. And I am a coordinator for a vision program in Arlington Heights, Illinois, with NSSEO. I was a vision teacher for about 10 years, in 1 year in Chicago Public Schools, and then 9 years out in Arlington Heights, where I now coordinate services. So I'm happy to be here.
Good morning. I'm Lisa Tabaka, and I service those students in the Central Illinois region. I work for the Heart of Illinois Low Incidence Association. I'm the vision facilitator there and also co-chair of Illinois Vision Leadership Council. HILEA provides service to five entities within the Central Illinois region, and I've been in the profession now for 17 years. Thanks so much for having us. We're excited to be here.
Yeah, and I don't think Amy Deegan is here with us. At least I don't see her. So if she hops on, we can have her join us too. But Amy is one of the consultants with ISBE for the Special Education Low Incidence Division. So we are here to share just some points about how we have navigated this year in virtual learning, as everyone kind of has experienced. I think March 16th is definitely a day that we will all remember in education, as it was the day that we had to make the transition from what we knew in terms of in-person learning and shift to virtual learning, which definitely showed its challenges to all of us. So some points that Amy was going to share from ISBE is just that learning right now is occurring in a variety of models. So, and depending on what district and what area you are in the state, you're either probably working in a hybrid model, which is the students are in school for part of the day and then they're at home in virtual learning for another part of the day. Some schools are fully remote, or meaning that the students are participating in a distance learning model for 100% of their education. And then there are some schools that are fully in person. So we kind of are running a multiple levels of learning models there. From the start of this, ISBE changed the clock hours for instruction to be 5 hours while we're kind of within this pandemic. But also reminding everyone that it's really important and essential for students to continue to receive their IEP services and meet the timelines and requirements. So, as we follow anything related to IDEA and the guidelines based within that, we haven't been provided any flexibility in terms of IEP services, timelines, requirements for completing evaluations from a federal level. So, therefore, ISBE has put out that they prioritize students who have special education needs or EL learners to be in person as much as possible. So, schools have been trying to navigate that, especially in this fall piece where we're in the phase four in Illinois, and trying to make sure that we are supporting all students in their learning and make sure that they have access to that. In addition, many of our students are serviced from a 504 plan. So students that are receiving services in a 504 model are under the Office of Civil Rights. So they kind of are under a different entity than our students with IEP services. And then lastly, there's just when you receive this PowerPoint, there is a COVID-related email from ISBE. It's COVID19@isbe.net. And that is where all questions regarding school and COVID should be directed. So we're going to kind of dig into what virtual learning has looked like as well. So go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, in addition to that, ISBE also put out an FAQ for parents of students with disabilities, as well as just educational rights and responsibility, and really understanding special education within Illinois. These documents were updated in August of 2020, and both of those links are provided within the PowerPoint if you choose to reference those at a later date. So basically, as districts move forward with making decisions on attending in-person, remote, or that blended environment, it was really imperative that students who are blind or visually impaired were supported based on the decision to attend school, whether it was via remote, in person, or in that blended learning. And these supports were planned for and decided upon based on individual need. And so, as discussed really by Molly, teachers of students with visual impairments, no matter the decision by families, worked to really provide FAPE. And access to the information was the key in determining success for these students with visual impairments. So most districts, depending upon the family's decision, they work to write individualized remote learning plans, or we call those IRLPs. And really, this learning plan is an alternate plan for providing students with disabilities IEP services and learning why schools are closed and in that remote phase. So this means that special education and then those related services must continue to be provided to the greatest extent possible. So a remote learning plan is really created by the IEP team, and then it becomes a part of that student's IEP team. Again, while making these decisions, access to information remained key for those students. And then in addition to those students that require orientation and mobility, their needs were reviewed and decided upon based on guidelines within the district or the county. And so teams, of course, recognize that services are necessary, but health and safety of the students and staff needed to be taken into consideration. And so while some training with the orientation and mobility instructor was put on hold, other services provided by that certified orientation and mobility specialist continued on. So we really did not see a change in some of the services that were provided to those students. So I continue to mention that word access to information, and a lot of schools really relied on a lot of remote platforms and really in order for those students to access that information, whether it was via remote or that blended in-person environment. And Google and Microsoft Teams really continued to make changes in order to support a variety of learners, not just those learners who are blind or visually impaired. Access technology like screen readers and screen enlargement software continues to be important skills taught by teachers of students who are blind or have low vision. Along with those built-in accessibility features, they're being utilized and are much more robust and easier for students and families to access on the fly. In Illinois, we also have the Illinois Assistive Technology Project, which remains available with resources for families and teachers. And then along with that, really the abundance of technology and platforms being utilized by districts, accessibility has never been more important right now. And as teachers of students with visual impairments, the hurdles that we face really lie within the development of skills for these accessibility products. Elementary students are being asked to use devices that often require intense instruction in order to learn with a screen reader or screen enlargement software. And learning a new product while trying to access, you know, schoolwork can be challenging at times for these learners. So support from families and educators, along with resources provided by these companies, really just continues to remain a priority. And, you know, as educators, we continue to really press on. I really liked that motto earlier by Nina. I believe she said being fearless and addressing the needs of the learners as they continue to change. And really collaboration is an important concept as we all continue to embark on this journey, and it continues to evolve sometimes daily. So I know moving forward, Molly's really going to address the support families can provide at home for our students with visual impairments.
Thank you, Lisa. So as Lisa kind of detailed there, there's been some challenges, but definitely some learning curves that we have embarked on in this journey in remote learning. So access being one of those challenges that we've kind of worked through. But one of the beautiful things that came out of being in this stay-at-home order and then shifting to this kind of myriad of learning models that we're in right now is what connection we've built with families. And being able to connect with families in a different level where they're seeing their student at home and they're seeing their learner and what they're working on, and then really having those skills translate to their natural setting has been really important and essential for our students and their growth. And so the communication and support of families has just been wonderful and also so needed to make sure that our students are continuing to be supported. In talking about how families can continue to support students as we are still in this kind of, like I said, remote hybrid situation is first, again, going back to that word of access. So making sure that students have access, making sure that the families are really in communication with their teachers of the visually impaired to understand the learning platforms that students are using and how they're accessing any of their curriculum needs, as well as being really vocal and communicating what are the challenges and what are the difficulties that students at home are facing, and how can we then problem solve as an educational team to support that student's needs in terms of access and technology. In addition, we know that our students work really well when they have a supported space and that they understand where their learning environment is and they're in control of their learning environment. So if it's possible, having a designated space in their room or in an office where the student can know where their materials are that they need and that they can easily grab any manipulatives that they might have or any learning materials and braille books that they might need access to throughout the day, and that they can continue to be organized in their learning at home just like they are in school. Having a maintained and set schedule is very important when students are learning at home, being able to provide routines so that students know what's predictable and when they're supposed to be logging into a Zoom meeting versus when they're doing independent work or what that looks like will really help ensure success for the learner at home. And lastly, just empowering your children at home or empowering students. We know that this is a really difficult time. None of us as teachers really wanted to shift to a distance learning model. We all wish that our students can be back in person. We miss them terribly when they're not in the buildings. But we understand that there are pieces that we want to empower our students so that they can be vocal about what is challenging for them. Lisa alluded to the fact that we are kind of at the mercy of the platforms that schools are using. And sometimes we have to be really vocal and advocate for our students to say that this is not accessible and make sure that students understand how to advocate for their needs as well. So that empowerment piece from a family perspective is also so important right now. And then we just wanted to spend a moment to talk about IVLC. I know we spoke at the beginning saying that Lisa and I are co-chairs of the Illinois Vision Leadership Council. So this is a council of supervisors and some teachers who all share leadership positions in Illinois. Our mission of IVLC is to empower educators with the implementation of best practices in order to maximize potential for students with visual impairments. We're really proud of the work we do. We meet once a month right now to ensure that everyone in this state is continuing to power forward with anything related to best practices. So we've talked about virtual assessment tools, we've talked about different accessibility platforms, and just being able to support each other from this low incidence field. We also have, if anyone is on Instagram, we have a hashtag and a page. It's called Why I Teach, WHYEYETEACH. And the importance of that is really trying to raise awareness about what the role of a teacher of the visually impaired is in this school setting. So working to really amplify what our jobs are and try and recruit new teachers and high school students to this wonderful field that we're in and be able to showcase the incredible work that we do with students. So if you want to follow along, we have a lot of guest teachers that hop on there and are showing some of the amazing work that's been happening in Illinois, and you get to see some fun students along the way as well. So that is our short and sweet kind of brief talk. I mean, we could spend hours talking about virtual learning. So we hope that gives you a little bit of a flavor of what's been going on in our schools in Illinois. And we'd be happy to answer any questions right now.
All right. Thank you. And I want to see if there are any questions for our guest. I see that Carlton Walker has raised her hand. So if one of the co-hosts could invite her to unmute.
Good morning.
Morning.
And thank you so much for your presentation. Just a little bit of background, I'm the parent, the president of the National Organization of Parents of Blind Children, and I am a certified teacher of blind students, although I'm not working in the field right now. I guess not many people are working in the field, but there you go.
Very true.
A couple of questions. One, I just wanted to make sure that the word's getting out about the embosser that's available from APH using federal quota funds, the Page Blaster, and how that might be a really good idea. Probably would have been a good idea before COVID, but really definitely now to have embossers at children's homes so that they can produce hard copy materials as easily as sighted kids can. But I really want to drill down on the platform issues. We've been having a lot of trouble with that. In fact, NFB has an education technology survey where we're trying to get information. But I heard you say we're really at the mercy of the schools. And I get that sort of. It's that the schools are at the mercy of the U.S. Department of Education, which a few years ago in 2010, 2011, set forth that inaccessible software and platforms like that are not legal even under Section 504 and ADA. And of course, they wouldn't be with students with IEPs because they have additional rights. How has it been going when you've been sharing this information with the schools? How receptive have the schools been to this information that they must choose accessible materials or at least provide accessibility to students?
Sure. I could speak to both of those, and then Lisa, please chime in as well. Lisa and I are in two different regions of the state, so sometimes we experience things differently as well. To your first point about the Page Blaster, absolutely. The Illinois Instructional Materials Center has done a wonderful job out of the Chicago Lighthouse. They send out a weekly, I think it is weekly, right, Lisa, newsletter. And fortunately, we had an excess of quota funds this year. And so I know a lot of people in the fall put in tons of orders, and the IAMC was wonderful about supporting the needs as we transitioned to needing different materials in students' homes. So that was definitely communicated, as well as we spoke about how to access the IAMC from IVLC. So I appreciate you bringing that up. It's definitely something with my team that I've talked about making sure that students had all of what they needed at home. In terms of inaccessibility or working with schools, my schools have been very receptive to it. I think that the piece when I said at the mercy of is, you know, all teachers right now have been trying multiple different ways to engage students in learning. And sometimes when we're within, you know, throwing everything out there, we learn that something's not accessible, or we have a teacher, the visually impaired, that really learns how to kind of navigate through that. So we've had really positive experiences with our school districts in my area. They've been wonderful about speaking with teachers of visually impaired, providing materials beforehand so the teachers can test them out, make sure that they are accessible for our students' learning needs. And then if they aren't, talk about either ways to accommodate for that or use a different platform. So far we have had wonderful success with the platforms we've used. We've primarily been in Zoom, and our students are accessing that using their Braille notes for the most part. And they've been able to hop on Kahoots, which is like an online quiz game, and multiple different websites. So it's just kind of a trial and error of trying with the students' devices. And sometimes, as we all know, the devices sometimes have a mind of their own. So trying to make sure that everything is working in the right direction. But so far, so good. Lisa, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would just kind of echo what Molly said in regards to the Central Illinois region. You know, our teachers have been very flexible about working with teachers and students in order to ensure that students are able to access information. Google has done a really nice job making sure that accessibility features are enabled for our low vision users if needed. And then I will say that, you know, provided a platform is not working for a student, I have had teachers that are willing to make some changes in order to make sure that that student can access the information at home or in the classroom, depending upon their learning environment. So I would agree with Molly. Excellent responses from teachers and districts.
Okay, I think there is someone else with a raised hand. There's a telephone number. Maybe the hosts see that person.
I will ask to unmute.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is Jamal Powell, and I have a question. And for the record, I had to switch phone numbers to facilitators because my cell phone's battery is dying. But be that as it may, I am curious to know, other than Zoom and Google devices, what other platforms tend to be accessible for students to use during online learning?
That's a great question. So first and primarily in my areas, we are only using Zoom or Google Meets to be able to do some synchronous learning. In terms of other platforms, like I said, sometimes students are using Seesaw. That is another one that we use often. That is an educational platform where you can send and receive information, and our students have access through that as well. In addition to making sure that any platform is accessible for our students, we also have to make sure that the platforms follow the Privacy Act. So there's a Student Online Privacy Act that's coming out in 2021, but it's something that we follow as well right now. So they have to be vetted in making sure that students are secure and safe and from privacy laws as well as accessibility. So we haven't been trying too many platforms because we also don't want to kind of confuse our students. So Zoom, Google Hangouts or Google Meets and Seesaw are the primary ones that we're using right now.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate your presentations and your willingness to answer our question. I do want to move on to our next presentation, but before I do that, I am wondering if our door prize chair, Ellen Bartold, is ready with a door prize.
Okay. I am going to give out two $30 prizes. No, three $30 prizes. Is Julia Anderson here.
Julia, if you're in the room, please raise your hand. She just did. There she is. Go ahead. She did raise her hand. So next.
Kevin Hildebrand.
Okay, Kevin Hildebrand. He was on, but I don't know if he's still on. Pull the next name.
Carlton Ann Cook Walker.
All right, Carlton. I know she. Carlton, can you raise your hand?
We got the raised hand from that was the Patrick Olson and Kevin Hildebrand.
Kevin. Okay, so both Kevin and Patrick. All right, because I know Kevin was on with Patrick, and yep. I think Carlton also raised her hand.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Ellen.